the magic twanger. Hi, everyone. This is Terry. Terry from Colorado, K-I-0-R-E, and this is the NLA Hams Net. We have this net every Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Everybody who wants to talk about NLA or Hams is or both is very welcome. And we're just dealing with ham radio issues and trying to help people get their ham radio license and then get to a point where they can communicate over long distances or short distances, depending upon the situation, all in the support of committees of safety. The net is kind of open. I act as a quasi-pseudo net control, but anyone is willing that is wants can jump in, and I will give them the floor immediately. Let's see. We were talking about Chapter 3. So tonight, last week, we were talking about Chapter 3. At the beginning of Chapter 3 on page 3-1, it says, you can find out more by going to www.arrl.org and then hyphenated, the four words hyphenated, Ham Radio License Manual. And I just pulled that up, and boy, they have a lot of stuff in there, even from before I was a ham. And I see sine waves, I see hookups, I see circuit diagrams. But I wanted you to know that I took a deeper look, and Chapter 3, I think, is the beginning of electricity components and circuits. And Chapter 4, because I have the book in front of me this time, is... Hold on, let's get there, Terry. I should have marked it, I guess, beforehand. Propagation antennas and feedlights. Well, we've talked about some of these things, but I want you to know that there's only four questions on each one, I believe is what it was. Let me go back to the question part in the back of the manual here. And subelement T3 has three questions, and subelement T4 has two questions.
Question. Can you give the URL again, please?
www.arrl.org/, and then four words that have a hyphen between them, ham radio license manual. And there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. So I'm rereading the elements here. Subelement T5, electrical principles math, that has four questions. Subelement T6, electrical components, semiconductor, circuit diagrams, component functions. Four questions. So that's a total of eight questions. Now, there's 35 questions on the test, and 8 from 35 is 27, leaving you with one question. You can still miss one other question, and you can still pass and get all of the electrical stuff wrong. Now, is that an encouragement to ignore the electrical stuff? No, what I'm saying is that's a freebie, because you know that every one you get right, you're that much closer to getting your ham license. So I found out where it says in the book here that electrons are so small that to light a household 100-watt bulb with a current of 1 ampere, or 1 amp if you prefer, and the man's name was Ampere, and that's the proper way to say it, but everybody that I know talks, shortens it to just amp. So 1 ampere, 6.25 billion billion of those electrons must pass through the bulb each second. That quantity, 6, 250, 000, a whole bunch of zeros, which is 6.25 times 10 to the 18th electrons, that's a billion billion, is somewhere like a quintillion, makes up 1 coulomb of electric charge. Now, here's the definition part. 1 ampere is the flow of 1 coulomb of electrons per second. 1 amp is the flow of 1 coulomb of electrons per second. 6.25 times 10 to the 18th electrons going past a single point per second. That's 1 amp. Amazing. Anybody got any questions? Hearing nothing, she continued on. Voltage is represented by an equation, a symbol E. Sometimes you'll see it as a V, but mostly everybody puts it as an E. So don't get thrown off by that. E stands for the electromotive force or electric potential. We were talking last week about how that's like a pump that's pushing electrons out there. They're pushing. There's some potential there. Voltage is always measured from one point to another point or with respect to some reference voltage. Voltage is measured with a voltmeter. Well, that makes sense. The polarity of the voltage can be either positive or negative. A negative voltage repels electrons, and a positive voltage attracts them. Well, yeah, that's kind of true. But when you think about it, anytime you measure a voltage, you're measuring a differential. The electrons are flowing one way or other in the wire, and it's up to you to figure out which way that is. Let's just say that the negative terminal of a battery is a source of electrons, and the positive terminal of a battery is a sink for electrons. It pulls them in. And if you want to get with the Navy, we could talk about current holes, but we're not going to do that right now. Okay, I have an almond stuck on page, in the middle of the test, 1159. It was in a sack with almonds. The Earth's surface acts as a universal reference for voltage measurements. It is called Earth ground, ground potential, or just ground. And then there's a picture there. And then it talks about circuits. We kind of touched on this last time, but a circuit is any path through which electrons can flow or current can flow. If two or more devices, such as light bulbs, are connected in a circuit so that the same current must flow through all of them, you know, each one in series, that is a series circuit. If two or more devices are connected so that the same voltage is present across all of them, that's a parallel circuit. So voltage is the same on a parallel circuit. Current is the same on a series circuit. When you take a voltmeter and you measure it across one of those lamps, it will have a voltage drop. And that represents how much voltage is on there. So if you take... I had a guy ask me, he was working on his motorcycle. He only had 6-volt bulbs, but he had a 12-volt motorcycle, and he wanted to know if there's a way to hook it up. And I said, yeah, if you put them in series, because you'll have 6 volts drop across the one bulb, and then you'll have 6 volts drop across the other bulb. There'll be 6 volts each, so there'll be a drop, and they'll be bright. But you can put 12 volts on them that way. If you try and hook them up in parallel, well, the voltage is the same in parallel, so you have a 6-volt bulb and then another 6-volt bulb, and they're both getting the full 12 volts. Well, what do you think happens there? They flash, and they are no more. In technical terms, that's called letting the smoke out. Now, usually on a light bulb, it'll look as a shady part or a stain on the inside of the light bulb that you can't see through. So that smoke collects on the outside of the bulb because it's mainly a vacuum in there. But on resistors or something, when you blow those and the smoke gets out, that's a fancy way of saying, I just lost a component in my receiver, transceiver, whatever it is, and it doesn't work anymore. So if you let the smoke out, it doesn't work anymore. And that's kind of an inside joke with hams. Don't let the smoke out, which means don't cross up the polarity and don't cross up how much voltage a unit can take. That's a small bit of humor. I hope no one believes everything I say, but that was interesting. I like it. Okay. Voltmeters are connected in parallel with a component that they're measuring across because voltage is the same if you hook up parallel. When you're measuring current, well, if you have a circuit, and since you got to hook it up in series, you put an ammeter in series and you measure how much current is going through a point in the circuit, i.e. the ammeter, at any particular time. And if 1 amp is showing on the ammeter, that means you have 6.25 times 10 to the 18th electrons passing that point every second in that meter. Interesting. Any questions so far? An open circuit usually means that, well, it's not really a circuit anymore. It's open. So the electrons can't get back to where they were trying to get to, going from the negative to the positive. And therefore, the whole thing just quits. Another thing that might happen is a short circuit. That's a direct connection, usually unintentional, between two points in a circuit. I'm not advocating this, but anyway, I saw something up on Facebook today. I keep it so I can check on the kids and see how they're doing. I get really neat pictures. But this guy's driving down the road, and he sees a flash. Doesn't know where the flash comes from. But 1 second later, a goose drops down onto the street in front of him. Now, what do you think happened? The goose spread its wings, and that goose was big enough to stretch between the wires on a power line. And the goose wasn't thinking about that. Geese do not know their electrical theory at all. And he touched the two wires. Instantly, there was a path for the electricity. And with, like, a normal house circuit is somewhere in the neighborhood of, what, 15,000 volts until it's taken down by the transformer. So let's just say it's 10,000 volts. He had 10,000 volts through him instantly, which completely fried all of his muscles, and he died. So Terry is talking about geese getting killed tonight, and I'm going a different way. Anyway, that goose dropped down because it was dead. If you short circuit, the goose acted as a short circuit on the lines right there. And for an instant, there was no electricity going anywhere else except through that goose. An open circuit is made by breaking a current path in a circuit. Any questions so far?
Maybe just a little comment for DC circuits.
Yes, sir.
That energy takes the most direct path between the plus and minus, or the ground and the hot wire. Many years ago, I worked on submarines, and we had a 350-watt plate or audio amplifier on a submarine, old fleet type, and it was early spring, cold out, and I went up in the morning, and the inside of a submarine is just about as wet as the outside of a submarine at that point. And this amplifier was set up in a nice metal cage, and it had a little metal toggle switch to turn it on and off. And it seemed awful wet, so I only reached out with one hand, and I put one finger on the ground cage around the switch and then flick the switch with the other one. And at that point, I had about 3,500 volts go through my index finger and come out my thumb and leave a big hole. So it does take the shortest path, and it does get your attention, and I can understand why that goose dropped out of the sky as it went by. End of
it will do it. Yes. I had a friend once who was working on his, he was helping his father move some heavy stuff around the yard, and they got too close to a power line. And it went right down the power line, and he was holding a wire off of that to stabilize the load. And it went right down that wire, and that it caught him in the side of his foot. And it's just like somebody take an ice cream scoop and scooped out a big portion.
Yep.
So I sympathize with that. And you see that every day, I would imagine, huh, Jan?
Right. Yep. And I'll tell you something. That is very difficult to heal. It's not like a cut. It's not even like a burn. It's like a big hole in your body. It takes
yeah.
forever to heal. Yep.
And it could have been cauterized, which...
Oh, yeah.
That means you got dead skin, and you got to wait until that sloughs off before you can really start healing and putting it back.
Exactly.
Okay. We've talked about voltage. And does anybody else have another topic they want to talk about? This is the one that puts a lot of people to sleep because they can miss all 8 questions and still pass. We will plow forward.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Say again.
Or they can study up and have 8 easy answers or 4 easy answers.
That's a fact. That's exactly right. Thank you, Jan. Anybody else want to say anything? We studied voltage. Voltage is how much is pushing on that circuit. Push it around to the other side. You could have 1.5 volts, you can have 3 volts, you can have 6 volts, you can have 12 volts. That just means there's more pressure on the electricity to go through your circuit. We could talk about current. We already talked about current, which is 1 coulomb past a wire in 1 second. The third part of that concept is resistance. And we kind of touched on it last time. It's like the water hose. When you clamp it down, you pinch it off. That's big resistors for the flow of the water. Well, a resistor resists the flow of electrons at a point. All materials impede the flow of electrons to some degree. I want to reemphasize this. Even a wire has resistance in it. When you compute how long your wire is going to be, like Jan when he strung his antenna, or your feed line, there's some resistance in that feed line. You have to put that into your equation, or it'll come up to bite you. You won't have the signal you think you have. This property is called resistance. Represented by the symbol R, resistance is measured in ohms, which are represented by the Greek letter omega. Resistance is measured with an ohm meter. So some of you have heard of ammeter now, voltmeter, and ohm meter. And if you put them all together, the picture on 3.3 shows exactly the meter that I have. It's a Fluke. Well, that's not exactly, because I think I have a Fluke 77. This is a Fluke 75 or 76. 78. I can't read. I need my glasses and more light. But that's a multimeter. A multimeter will measure ohms or volts or amps, which are respectively resistance, ohms, voltage, electromotive force, or E, volts, or current in amps. And then they have the little thing that I tried to talk about 2 weeks ago and got all messed up because I hadn't looked at it in a long time. And that was the eagle flew over the Indian reservation. You draw a circle. You take the whole top part of the circle and put E there. And then you cut into quarters the bottom part of the bottom semicircle. And you put an I on one side and an R on the other. And whichever one you want, you just cover up. And if they're across from each other, you multiply to get that answer. So if you put your thumb over the E, I times R will give you E. If you hide the I, which is current, E over R, in other words, volts divided by the resistance, will give you the current that's flowing through that point. If you hold your finger over the R, E over I will give you the resistance. That's voltage over the current. And then they have diagram 3.5, which shows the different meters, and it lets you compute that. It goes through how to compute using Ohm's law, how to calculate how much current is flowing in there, or how much voltage there is, or how much resistance there is. And it has three little circuits and three little questions and three little answers. Very efficient. Now, let's see if there's anything I need to tell you. Oh, yeah, I need to talk about insulators. Materials in which electrons flow easily in response to an applied voltage are conductors. Metals such as copper or gold or silver are good conductors. So is salt water. The human body conducts electricity as well because we're bags of salt water mainly. Materials that resist or prevent the flow of electrons are called insulators. So when you see that round thing that's up on the power line pole, it's holding the wire up above everything, but away from the pole, that's an insulator up there. Some good insulators are glass, and ceramics, dry wood, paper, most plastics, and other non-metals. George Ohm, a 19th century scientist, discovered that voltage, current, and resistance are proportional, and that's Ohm's law. They named it after him, and we talked about some of that. I really need a chalkboard to walk you through, or everybody be looking at the same diagram to walk you through how to compute Ohm's law. But just know that you can do it. Whichever one you don't have, you need it. So why is that helpful? Well, if you're going to light those two bulbs that I was talking about on that motorcycle, you better know that you're going to get, you want six volts as a voltage drop, because they're going to resist just enough for 6 volts to flow through there nicely. And since you have 12 volts, you're going to have to hook them in series, because resistance is additive in series. 6 volts on one, 6 volts on the other, there's your 12 volts, and they will shine just fine. Then it talks about power. There's a similar circle, and it's called pi, P-I-E. Power is equal to the voltage times the current. And then a similar thing, the voltage is equal to the power divided by the current, or the current is equal to the power divided by the voltage. Why is that? We always talk in on a lot of stuff as watts. Power, represented by the symbol P, is measured in watts, which are abbreviated W. Power is the rate at which electrical energy is used. Power is calculated as the product of voltage and current. An amount of power consumed is often referred to as the load that is applied to a circuit. and then it goes down through the calculations. Now, everybody is familiar with a 100-watt light bulb. And just for the sake of doing it, neglecting that it's AC, you put 120 volts on that, running 1 watt. Let's see if I'm thinking right. 1 watt divided by 100 volts. Well, that's 1/100th is the current. So you're only running 1 amp. So a 100-watt light bulb takes roughly 1 amp. Now, this is mainly DC circuits because things start happening differently when you apply an AC voltage, which means it's a voltage that goes up and down. And the next page, 3-6 in Chapter 3, talks about AC and DC. And then it gets into a lot of really neat stuff, and some people like to hear it and some don't. DC means direct current. That's what you get with a battery. I don't care how big the battery is or what shape it is. It's direct current. In the wall, the power company provides your house, normally with most people. This might be different with Jan. They provide 120 volt AC power, which means it's an alternating current. The thing about DC is that you've got to move all of those electrons out to wherever it is, go through the circuit, and come all the way back to your power source, which is your battery. DC, you suffer lots and lots of losses. But Tesla, Nikola Tesla, Hungarian? Romanian? I can't remember. Immigrant.
Serbian.
Found that Serbian, that's right. Thank you, Jan. Very good. He found out that it's much more efficient. Let's pull everything one way so the electrons are flowing one way, but we don't want to pull them all the way back. We want to push them the other way all of a sudden in a nice, neat flow called alternating current. So it alternates between moving this way in the circuit to moving that way in the circuit. Now all you're doing is moving the electrons around. You're not trying to send them all the way out and come all the way back. Now, am I simplifying that? Yeah, I'm oversimplifying, but that idea will help you until you understand it fully. The thing about DC current is that it has polarity. In other words, the plus side of the circuit is always going to be the plus side of the circuit. An AC circuit does not have polarity. It's going back and forth all the time. And because it goes forward one way and then back the other way, you can think of it as a negative side where it's pushing through the circuit, and then a positive side where it's a positive side where it's pushing through the circuit, and a negative side where it's bringing the electrons back. That idea of switching, first going one way and then going the other in an AC circuit, brings up another element that we have to add. How fast do we want to move those circuits back? In the home, you have AC electricity, alternating current, that's running at about 60 hertz. It's 50 hertz in England and some other places, and it's 60 hertz in others. If you have 120 volts, or a 240-volt circuit, either one, they're still at 60 hertz. When we did airplanes, when I flew on B-52s, they had AC generators on there that didn't produce 60 hertz. They produced 400 hertz AC waves. because that was more efficient throughout the airplane. They could route it with a little bit smaller wire, and it wouldn't burn up, and it worked a whole lot better. So they would use 400 cycles per second, or 400 times it would switch the direction it's going on the wave. Frequency is a fundamental concept in AC circuitry. You have to have it. Does anybody have any questions? I went through that pretty quick.
Just an aside, when I was a kid, they had an awful lot of used aircraft generators after the Second World War. They were all DC, 200 amp, 300 amp, 400 amp. And so I had a war surplus catalog, and for next to nothing, like $25, you could buy one of these huge generators. And so I looked up and found some plans to build an arc welder with one of these things. And for my $25 plus a few more bucks for cables and a ammeter and stuff, I was able to put together an arc welder. But they were big DC rather than AC units. Over.
Thank you, Jan. That's excellent. That's an excellent. I knew that it had happened, but I forgot about it. There were a lot of things you can pick up. We had a shortwave radio from inside one of these B-17s, and I never knew where it came from until one of the B-17s that goes around the country where you can buy rides. I didn't buy a ride. I was just taking the tour through the airplane, and there was that radio sitting at the radio station. And I thought, wow, that's where I used and listened to shortwave radio and some of those in the ham bands. But one of the easiest things to get, what I always tuned it to, was WWV. And WWV is close to my heart because they're just right over here in Fort Collins. And they have an antenna system that helps propagate the current time to the second throughout the world. And if you look up WWV and how to compute your time, it will tell you exactly how to figure out exactly what time it is, because it takes time to propagate the radio waves from WWV over to Australia, over to the Atlantic, over to South America. And if you know your distance, then you can use the speed of light to figure out how much delay you have to build in or take out from the WWV signal to keep your clocks exactly what they should be. But for mere mortals like myself, I hear the thing goes off and it goes beep, boo, doo, doo. I know that that's about when I want to hit my watch and get it started. Thank you for whoever that is. I don't know why it's in there, but I appreciate it. Okay, are there any questions? We've hit a lot of things tonight. I want you to know one of the things that keeps my mind is telling me I should tell you. We measure a lot of these frequencies in hertz, in megahertz and kilohertz, or just plain hertz, like your 60 hertz AC in your wall. Well, a hertz is nothing more than a car that carries coffins. I know, that's an old joke. A hertz is one cycle per second. And in the 60s, before they went over and called it a hertz, it was called a cycle per second, or a CPS. So the electricity, the AC current, in your house was 60 cycles per second. That was often dropped, the per second was often dropped and said, it's 60 cycles. 60 cycle and 60 hertz meant the same thing. And I learned about WWV on that shortwave radio from the back of a B-17, and I would tune it up to 5 megacycles. Well, that's 5 megahertz, but it's 5 million cycles per second. The radio in your car used to be, they would tell you over the air, that they were operating on a frequency of whatever it was. We'll just say 1390. I remember that one. No, 1190. 1190, that was KLIF in Dallas. Or 1360 KXL in Fort Worth. You can probably remember radio stations from your home. But KXL is on 1360 cycles or kilocycles per second. And they would say, yeah, KXL is operating on 13 kilocycles here in Fort Worth, Texas. And that was perfectly acceptable. And then in the mid-60s, they said, we're not going to call it cycles per second anymore. We're going to honor a guy named Hertz. And I forget all the details about why they picked him. Do you know him, Jan?
Well, he was just one of the early researchers that described AC circuits, I think. So they named it Hertz's.
They named it Hertz.
Yep.
So now, if you listen to the same station in Fort Worth, it's KXOL. I think they've changed their call sign by now. But they operate on 1,360 hertz or 1,360 kilohertz, which you can easily convert to megahertz by just putting a decimal three places over. So it's 1.36 megahertz, if you will. There's nothing fancy about it. All they're doing is changing the dimensions by changing the prefix. And hertz means the same thing as cycles per second. Did somebody have something to say?
I'm just curious, did you ever listen to Del Rio, Texas?
No, I missed Del Rio, Texas. What was in Del Rio?
100,000 watt transmitter. It was a clear channel station, which is allowed 50,000, so they put the transmitter in Mexico, and they ran it up to 100,000, so I could hear it in northwest Iowa.
Oh, wow. That's cool. I do know that some of those big transmitters, those tube transmitters from radio stations, were retired as they moved to digital circuitry.
Right.
And I know a ham right here in Greeley, Colorado, about 40 miles that direction right there, who got one of them. And he took this big AM transmitter and retuned it, because there's a little tuning crank on there, to the ham band. And instead of putting out, I think it was 15,000 watts, he tuned it all down, and you can look up on the Internet, and it'll show you how to do this. He cleaned everything up. He replaced the capacitors that needed replacing, tuned it all up, and now he had a 100-watt transmitter that'll probably last him the rest of his life because he's not putting that much power through it. Anytime you put power through a component of a circuit, you will get heat. That heat will eventually cause the failure of every component in the radio. Takes it a while, but a lot of radios were designed to carry a certain amount of current to keep the heat away from where it needs to be away from, the parts that would fail quickly, and keep it going to the parts that you could protect with cooling fins and all kinds of other things. Sometimes you get these big, there's a picture of it on page 3-7. At the top of the page, there's a thing showing you what resistors look like. And the top one is a great big old thing, wire wound, goes all the way across there, ceramic. That is a 1 ohm resistor. And it's built that way because it's got to carry a lot of heat. And it's hollow, so the air will blow right through it and cool it off. And you get those in some of those big machines. And that helps keep it cool. But because he's running on the ham bands and not nearly as much power as the AM station would put through it, that thing just clips right along without any problem. And it's just got the most beautiful sound you've ever heard because the tube circuits were all compensated and they are only working at maybe a tenth or maybe up 1% of what they did when this radio station was broadcasting at 10,000 watts. But they do eat some current, and they're as big as a small refrigerator or bigger, two refrigerators. So anyway, that's a nice side note. Well, that's about all I have. If anybody has any questions, please call now, or comments or criticisms or smack upside the head, whatever you got, call now.
You speak of air cooling. Working on submarines, we use water cooling often. It was more compact. And in the early 60s, we were testing high-power sonar transmitters up in Lake Seneca, New York, deep lake, 550 foot deep. And so every time we would pulse this sonar transmitter, we sat next to the power station out in the middle of the lake. You could see it about 2-3 miles across the lake. Well, every time we turned it on, the line voltage would drop so much in the local town there that every TV in town rolled. The next day they must have had hundreds of TV repairmen out there trying to fix it. And we realized what had happened. So we got a 55-gallon drum and we ran two big long electrodes into it. And we just ran lake water through that at a high rate of speed and dumped 200,000 watts into that 55-gallon drum when we weren't transmitting so that the load stayed constant at 200,000 watts all the time that we worked. And that solved their TV problem. But there wasn't any other way to solve the problem. Over.
Nice piece of history, Jan. Thank you for sharing that. I want you guys to know that the century we just left behind 17 years ago, most of what we've been talking about was discovered, found, whatever you want to call it, in that century and just a little bit of the previous century. And it's fascinating reading, if you can find it, the history of how this came about and how that came about. Okay, anyway, we have run out of our time, and I don't hear anybody. Does anybody else have anything they want to say? Please go ahead.
This is California Fred.
Hi, California Fred. Go ahead.
I have a comment, sir. The universities are now starting to burn their books and digitize everything, which means they are basically rewriting history for future generations. So I would suggest that if you have any means of